Steve Martin has been doing a weekly cartoon that he's collaborating with some illustrator on. And holy shit, they are the worst things I've ever seen. They're not
really.
They're awful.
Oh no.
I don't know if it's on purpose, but it's
Oh, well, now I need to see this.
I don't even know.
I haven't heard of this.
I couldn't tell you even what to search for. But the Jackbox Slack follows it every week and he tweets them and they're just like it's almost they're so bad it seems almost on purpose. Like Dada.
See, and this is a good thing that you could do for your brand. You got to establish when you're young that occasionally you do shit that's incomprehensible garbage.
Exactly.
So that way, whenever anybody feels like they want to criticize you, it's probably art, actually, what you were doing.
I'm pretty sure.
It's probably art.
If these are supposed to be bad, they're extremely good. And if they're supposed to be serious, they're extremely bad.
It's just, they're not jokes. They're just like ideas of jokes.
Yeah, this brings up a point that Liz makes, which is that this is wordplay, which is not jokes.
It's not jokes.
Let's see. Thank you for the hot link.
Anytime you need a sausage. Travis hasn't spoken yet. And in speaking, you have the opportunity to sway the last bit of the crew that has not voiced their opinion. The newest members of the crew who have not come to know the personalities and sort themselves into different positions on the ship. And they have been listening to another new member of the crew, Jane. Jane, who has shown herself to be competent. Jane, who has shown herself to be resourceful, and Jane, who has made a point of talking to the other members of the crew who find themselves new to the ship. She has been watching carefully as the other people speak before her. Travis, you have her ear. What do you say?
I want you to think of where you were before you joined this crew. Maybe you were alone. Maybe you had friends. Maybe you had a family. But something drove you here with us. I don't know what. It's different for each of you. But know that out there in this city, they're facing something that they've never seen before and they could never imagine. And maybe the reason that you're here is to help them. Help them save their city and help them save the life that they lead. And think, before you join the crew, if you were facing something like them, would you rather be helped? Would you rather be saved to keep the life that you have? Or would you rather run? I yield my time to Gable.
Travis, I do not take
everyone
the time.
Everyone kind of pushes
I yield
Gable
it back.
Forward to talk more.
Yield it back to the floor. I yield the time back to the floor. I don't need it again. No, thank you.
Does anyone
You've
else
been pushed
want
out to the center of the deck?
I don't want this time. No, thank you. Travis did fine. And gonna sit back down.
Fine.
Now.
At least the whole time I was saying good things.
It's called reversal. You know, it's like it's rhetorical technique.
All right. I would like you as a group to roll a, it's not persuasion, a charm check, which is based off presence and charm, which, oh, wow. Huh. I guess it seems that Gable has the highest presence score and that Travis that? So cool. has the highest charm score. Wow. I just knew that off the top of my head.
Right off the top of your head. Okay. That's incredible.
Because I understand this game so well, as we all do.
So that means our pool is, I believe, 2 yellow dice and then 3 green dice.
No, incorrect.
Oh.
Your pool.
2 yellow dice and 2 green.
2 yellow dice and 1 green.
1 green? Okay, yep. You sure? That's just, if you weren't paying attention. It's good that you're paying attention.
Way to keep me on my toes. And we'll just call this check hard. So that is 3 purple dice.
That's 3. Okay, let's shake Senora.
So that is 1 success and 3 threats.
Okay, thank you.
So Jane stands up and walks forward. So I'm new to the ship. Like a good portion of people here. I don't yet know how you do things, but I'm glad that this is the ship that I'm working aboard. I came here with Pliff, and I came here because we're running from the Red Feather Syndicate. The Red Feathers destroyed the town that we grew up in because we wouldn't hand over our goods, so they took them. And we had heard of the Tempest Armada, and we had heard of the Uhuru, and we just wanted to be a part of whatever fight was against the Red Feathers. We wanted to strike back at them, because they showed us how small we were and how much we didn't matter. I'm aboard this ship because this is the ship, and this is the crew that took down the civility. And you did it for an opportunity, but you also did it because a town needed your help. And that's the crew that I want to be a part of. So, I'll be honest, my interest is in seeing the Red Feathers handed their due. So I don't want to risk myself and the people around me on a fight against a supernatural force. But I've also heard stories of the Mariner. I know what he does. And the things that were visited at my town at the hands of the Red Feather Syndicate have been done 10 times over by the Mariner in the past. If the Uhuru is the ship that I signed up for, if the Uhuru is the ship that I think it is, then I think we have to fight. Because there is no one else on Sphere who would do it. And there needs to be someone who does. Because otherwise, what is this world worth? That's my time. And with that, Jane steps back into the crowd. There are rumblings and whispers that fall to silence as Orimar Vale stands up. He strides forward, looking around at the people who are considering the things that have been said. And he draws his sword. A sword that I named and I forgot the name of, but that's fine.
Gable grabs Travis and makes him sit down.
He draws his sword and holds it out in front of him. The shining blade gleams and makes his eyes sparkle in the morning sun. The red of the sky reflects against that blade, making it look like one that has already been soiled by battle. And in a swift move, he slams the point of the blade into the boards of the ship. It sticks farther in the wood than any man should be able to force even a blade as sharp as Orimar Vale's. It stands there the hilt wavering as Orimar lets go of it. He looks around and makes eye contact, seemingly with everyone on the ship. Then turns around and walks back towards the main mast and the barrel that he sat on while he was observing everyone. He takes his seat. Well, Captain Spoken, then. Bring out the buckets!
I hate to hear you say that, Spit. I really do.
We all do.
It's a very important tradition that we respect, but when you say, bring out the buckets, it's...
With the words and the phrasing.
And two wooden buckets are brought forward. Placed around them is a enclosure and a curtain. And the crew votes. The crew votes by taking their coin, which we should probably come up with a name for it, huh?
Euros.
Your sentence.
Your sentence is...
That's cool.
Pretty great.
Or euros.
Euros for sure.
I'm trying to think, like, your sentence sounds almost like you've been condemned by the red... Maybe, like, your crimes or your...
Your misdemeanors. Sin.
Something about, like, your crimes. I could dig that.
Your stay?
Your stay.
That's fun.
Yeah, I gotta open a thesaurus now. Here we go. Okay. Your offense could be good. Your misdeed, like an Uhuru misdeed. Your malfeasance.
I like a malfeasance. Yeah,
malfeasance.
Japan.
Yeah.
Japan.
Yeah. Each member of the crew room. Great.
Every time you said crew and Uhuru together, in my head, I always say Ukuru.
Ukuru.
I say Kruhuru.
Kruhuru is good.
Kruhuru.
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 Each member of the Uhuru is expected to present their malfeasance. The object that represents their membership of this crew, and place it into the bucket of the way they think the vote should go. It takes some time as each member of the crew filters into the privacy curtain and makes their selection. But ultimately, it is up to the quartermaster to count the votes. And Johnny, once again, we come to you. And I'll let you decide like you decided last time. How did this vote go?
I think it was close. But once again, as I said before, I would like for everyone to have very narrowly voted to flee, but I would like to tell everyone that they voted to fight.
Excellent. I like that choice. And I will reveal to you now, just because Johnny made that arbitrary choice, which rules, every time the crew rolls in the upcoming encounter, they will have a black die because the majority of them do not want to do this.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great
that
stuff.
Makes sense. I get it. That's good. But also, come on.
No.
All right. The votes have been tallied. We will fight.
And there is a roar from the crowd that starts with just those who are most hungry for battle, but moves out across the rest of the ship as each voice joins the others, knowing that they decided to abide by what their crewmates chose to do. Uhuru! 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 And it breaks out over the ship, and that thundering call sounds across Nordia as the heart bell rings again. that tolling of the bell and those shouts, though he doesn't know it, spell a threat to the mariner, whose ships even now gather in the harbor outside of Nordia, waiting to strike. We return to the deck of the Uhuru after the vote that has just taken place. All of the crew members are bearing expressions of grim seriousness as they contemplate going into battle against the forces of the Mariner, even if it's only for a short time, while the captain's council prepares a maneuver that will hopefully banish the Mariner from this place and spare Nordia his wrath. Where are the captain's council right now? That's you.
Oh.
I'd maybe like to be like in the where we're keeping the birds.
Yeah, I think definitely Gable was going to start the scouting party anyway, and whoever wanted to come, and I assume that Janet wanted to come as well. I don't know about Travis, though.
Travis will join you in the birdatorium.
Really? Okay.
So you're all in the birdatorium. We can see Flea is there, being the largest and most domineering bird. Flea is kind of like in a very folded up state right now and sort of cuddled in. That's the only way you can really fit docked. With an albatross, you know, they'd mostly be able to fly alongside the ship. And right now, very particularly, Flea looks kind of antsy. They're pecking at the cage a little bit, and he's, you know, fidgeting around quite a bit. Lucas is preening as always, and you know what? We'll say Lucas is just enjoying a good occasional scream.
You know,
just as he does. And of course, Metatron is perched, looking very kind of self-serious and attentive to Gable as they are in the room.
Flea is the one that ate the curlew, right?
Yes.
Oh, poor buddy. Gable is showing Jonnet how the new harnesses work, how all the birds are outfitted with like the sharp beak covers that can do more war damage, and overall just trying to eyeball Flea and see why they're acting so weird.
Yeah, and let's really get into describing that armor, because again, it's very toyetic and it's probably something that's going to show up on action figures. So we really want to emphasize that, you know, maybe there's kind of a bit of a spring-loaded missile that shoots out.
Yeah, water gun, understandable. It looks like horse armor.
Shoots a missile out.
Yeah.
Do your thing, Liz.
No, it's lasers.
And the bird's karate chop.
Yes. Yeah. With just one leg and one arm, though, just to the side, so it looks good. It looks basically like horse armor, mostly, like just a piece that fits over a head. But there is no bottom jaw piece. It's just, the bottom jaw is still open for biting, but it hangs a little bit lower on the top hangs a little bit lower on the beak, so like when it's easier to like peck and tear like pull away.
Is there anything on the bird's chest? This is just personal curiosity for me.
I don't think so. I don't think that would work. Like if you turned a horse right side up, there wouldn't be anything on his tummy.
For sure, but horses also typically aren't flying over the people that they're fighting. With a bird, that might be the case.
Birds do fly, Liz.
A lot of What? And a lot of the attacking that at least Metatron would be doing would be with his talons.
Yeah, you're right. Well, probably then just a leather underpiece.
Cool.
Then, because like actual heavy armor would impact the wingspan of and actually flapping the wings, so something a little bit lighter like that.
Mariner battle gable with bird armor included. They're gonna save the Uhuru. Buy yours today. Available at KB Toys.
All right.
Is KB still around?
Nah. Not at all.
No, it's definitely freaking gone. That's why I think we're safe to say that. Yeah, cool. So we've got these birds that have been outfitted with this cool armor, and Gable is showing that off to Jonnet.
But, okay, so, I mean, we're putting this armor on, but we're not planning on getting into a fight up there, are we? We're just trying to figure out where they're coming from.
I don't plan on it, but you never know. Especially if we're scouting into the forces to see how many ships they might have. We don't know how many ranged weapons that the Mariner might have. I will tell you, both of you, I need you to both look at me. If they start shooting, we will turn back, okay? No flights of fancy, no heroism. That is for the inward parts of the land. You know, that. But the word for the inward parts of the land.
You know it.
Inland, yes.
Inland.
Travis, what sort of prize do you give Gable for remembering a basic word?
I think Travis has some very tiny plaques in his in his jacket. So he's like, just one second, and he's checking all of his many pockets. No, not this one. No.
Wait, do you have that jacket?
Is not.
This is a spare jacket.
Okay. Yeah. Backup jacket.
Sure. Yeah. I have a lot of jackets. Just not. They're not all good. One second. Hold on. No.
It's going to be very.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. Here.
We're
this
holding.
Is for you.
What does it say?
What does it say, Liz?
What does it say? I don't know what it says. He gave it to me.
Oh, hold on. Wait. Hold on. Okay, here you go. Just this one says, I can't read a simple plaque, so you can have this one. And then the other one says, I remembered a very common word by saying two words that sounded exactly like that word.
Okay. First of all, you're going to need a lot
Travis.
More of these. It's going to happen a lot more.
Why do you think I have all these pockets?
I don't know. That's
you're really encumbered, Travis. Okay, I'm just saying you're just taking things a little bit like maybe over the top. Actually, hang on. I've got a plaque for over the topness. Hang on. And then he reaches in a barrel of hay because he put it there for some reason. And this is for you, Travis. Here's your sign.
What is it?
It's the sign. It's the sign that
it's your sign.
It's a sign that you are you've done a thing of a certain type of thing.
Wait, is that what's happening?
I don't remember 100%. What? Here's your sign.
Yeah. It was a loose adaptation, weak homage,
a pastiche.
Hold on. One second.
Oh no.
Here you go. It says, that's not a plaque.
What? Okay. All right. Fine. You got me. Okay.
I have one. Gable goes into their pocket and brings out a piece of paper and writes on it and hands it to Travis. It's a paper that says you're stupid.
Hold on. Here you go. It's a plaque that says, I'm not stupid. That's paper, stupid.
That was impossible.
The Mariner is coming.
Oh, hold on. Here, this plaque says, sorry for your Mariner's mark. We will get through this together.
Gable Thanks. Picks up Travis and shakes him, and he sounds like a coin purse. You can't get on the bird.
Hold on, hold on.
You can't get on the bird with that on. You are too heavy.
This one says, put me down.
I'm going to put you down, but not because you told me to.
Travis, all of these plaques are bigger than the pockets that they originate from.
This one says the pockets are bigger on the inside than they are on the outside.
It's impossible. That's not a thing that can happen. No, don't.
Here, or is it?
All right, I'm getting on the bird. I know if any, you can continue your vaudeville campaign. That's not what the word is. Routine? Okay. I'm going to go now.
Hold on.
No.
Janet also gets on a bird.
Throw it into the ocean.
Here, this one says you mistook two common words, but you got there in the end.
Goodbye.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. We're getting things started off with a radvertisement, and this one comes to us from the good folks at the World Builders Charity. For those who don't remember, the World Builders Charity was founded by Patrick Rothfuss, who is a good friend of the show, and they are in the middle of their mid-year Geeks Doing Good 2020 fundraiser drive. They want you to know that for 2020, they've developed all new products to bring back their popular Indiegogo campaign. This is the fundraiser that helps world builders keep the lights on, pay their people, and remain a 100% pass-through charity. That means on other drives, every dollar you give them goes exactly to the cause you want to support, which is a thing that does not exist for pretty much every other nonprofit. But this drive is also the drive where they develop a bunch of exciting new merchandise with their creative partners. Over on their Indiegogo page, you can check out the awesome new products they're doing, like Jim Butcher signed book plates, a King Killer cosplay kit, Chuck Wendig's Terrible Mind merch, artisanal foods, and much, much more, including three products from Campaign Skyjacks. That's right, this year the World Builders folks reached out directly to us to help us develop some new merch in order to support their charity drive. The first is a beautiful Uhuru Jolly Roger pin that comes in at about 1.5 inches with a brushed brass finish that looks amazing. There's also an Uhuru Jolly Roger t-shirt that I can attest is incredibly soft and also has a gold foil printing, so it looks really cool. And finally, the thing that I am most excited about, it's unfortunately not part of this episode, but on a future episode, Travis receives a handkerchief as a gift, and we created a reproduction version of it. The handkerchief is 24 inches by 24 inches, which means it makes a perfect accessory, if you fold it, a makeshift face mask, or if you lay it out on a table, it makes a perfect replacement Illimat board. All three of these products were done with art by Justin Langill, an incredibly talented artist who's worked with us a bunch in the past, but you might not have seen his work yet. The work Justin did on this handkerchief is incredible. It is full of Nordian sights and symbols, like flying ships, flowers, and bog mummies, with some handsome renderings of Travis's animal forms. But you don't need to take my word for it. Head over to the Indiegogo page for Geeks Doing Good 2020 by going to bit.ly/WB-GDG2020, Googling Geeks Doing Good 2020 Indiegogo, or following the link in our show notes to take a look for yourself. We are so thrilled for the opportunity to bring you really cool merchandise like this. And we would love to see lots of Skyjacks fans come out and support this. If you do, there's a chance in the future we'll be able to make more cool stuff like this. And all that money goes towards a great cause. A huge thanks to the World Builders team for supporting the show this week. And before we get to our episode, I want to take a quick moment to thank some of our backers on Patreon. Maya, thank you. Jay Ferguson, thank you so much. Jeff Barber, thank you very much. B. Richard, thank you so much. Anita McGrath, thank you. Lieutenant, thank you very much. Jason Gabbert, thank you. Emily Harker, thank you so much. Brigid Igo, thank you very much. David Zagers, thank you. And Jacob Auer, thank you very much. Thanks again to everyone who supports the show. We wouldn't be able to produce it without you. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. So which birds are people riding?
Metatron.
Lucas.
Flea.
Oh, did you want Lucas? You can have Lucas.
Oh, I'll take Flea.
Yeah, Flea saved Jonnet's life earlier. That seems like a pretty good match to me.
And Lucas now, still has part of Johnny inside of him.
Oh, yeah. Lucas, I think as you go to climb aboard, Lucas just gives Travis a hungry look. And you know how horses will like kind of harmlessly nip at your shoes sometimes? That's kind of where Lucas is at for human flesh, specifically Travis's.
I will never get close to a horse.
Just little nips.
I'm going to draw a luminary now to see if anything interesting happens on your flight out. It's the changeling.
Oh, I know one of those.
This is she.
We take off from the Uhuru. The Skamalic has been cleared away from the aviary doors to allow the underside and side of the ship to open up for all three birds to lift off together. Lucas starts with quite a bit more flapping than the others, but soon they are all up in the air and circling above the ship and Nordia itself. It is still raining, though not as intense. The sky in front of you has gray clouds that are tinged with a spot of red. Basically, anywhere that is thinner or broken in the clouds lets a haunting red light through over the landscape. It is perhaps the dreariest thing you could possibly imagine. You're all in the air, I'm assuming communicating together through simple hand signals and whatever language that you've developed to talk to one another while you're in the air. What do you do? Who's leading the way?
I think Jonnet does like a symbol where he spreads his arms out real wide. He goes from a close fist, close up tight, to wide to maybe indicate, are we spreading out or... And then he keeps his both hands together and puts them in a straight vector. Like, are we flying together in formation? Because that makes sense in my head.
Gable signals back, flying together in formation, and holds up a hand with five fingers to indicate that after like 5 minutes, we'll spread.
Okay.
Travis puts his hands together, does a small bow, and then holds up five fingers to indicate thank you, five.
Gable turns to Jonnet for confirmation of thank you, five.
Jonnet puts his hands together, small bow, and holds up five. Jonnet just also leans down and gives Flea a big, like a pat on the front of the chest and just kind of, they're in the air, so like an air whisper. Just like, hey, thanks for taking care of that curlew back there. I never got a real chance to say thanks. You're a real one.
If Lee turns back and gives you a look, well, I mean, it's a big, like, they're basically like seagulls, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it gives you like a big high pitch. Well, I mean, it would be high pitched if it was a small bird. This is like a rumbling bird cry. We can find seagull audio and, you know,
pitch
that way the hell down, whatever that sounds like. And And it gives you a look like, I think Flea has looked at you differently probably since Bujanith, but in a way that like you really couldn't place your finger on. But it's almost like there's a mutual respect between the two of you. And your three birds fly off. As you pass over Nordia, there are details that are difficult to make out because there's a lot of fog that is rolling in from the bay. And, you know, like lower Nordia is hard to see. Upper Nordia, you can still see. Like there are people that are mostly in buildings. Like there's a lot of smoke coming up from the various inns and taverns around Nordia. They appear to be entertaining mostly. There is a makeshift tarp that has been thrown up over the fountain in the center square and Sven. So people appear to be mostly still carrying on, even though the vendors and stalls are not out. As you look towards the water, you see a rolling fog in front of you, and it appears that the weather gets more intense the farther out you travel. So you're facing a lot of rough rain, heavy winds, and fog ahead.
Is it like a wall of fog?
I think as you drift out, basically, if you come to the beach, you'd be looking down on banks of fog, and slowly they get higher and higher.
So you can't necessarily go above it.
You could go above it, but you'd essentially be going above the clouds at a certain point, and you'd only be able to look down and see clouds.
Is there a way that, like, an arcane spell might... like work out in the sense of like, I want to like use a spell that would part the fog right in maybe Jonnet's immediate like front, if that's at all possible.
Yes, I do think that would be possible. I do think it would be difficult. And gotcha. A thing to consider is if you part the fog to see down into the water, whatever's in the water will be able to see back at all of you, and it will be very obvious that you're there because the clouds are breaking and the fog is parting. I do think, though, Gable has a chance. It might be a hard check, but Gable has a chance to do a divine check and use their sort of evil sense.
Yes.
Because we're looking for evil.
And I will say we also, the birds already have lamps. We established that. Mm-hmm. For like these foggy days, they have like little lamps hanging on chains in front of them. I can do a check. How hard would it be, Joms?
I think it's 3 purple. Now there are also things that you can do to edge those odds in your favor if you would like.
I mean, it's pretty good. I got 2 yellow and 2 greens.
Oh, yeah.
On magic checks. I don't... Wow.
Sounds good.
You don't know if this is good.
That's 4 successes and 3 threat.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a wild roll, my dudes.
So
let's go, Gable.
Gable, you absolutely take point on this. You are sitting on the back of Metatron as he is gliding around banks of storm, basically avoiding the worst winds and trying to keep his feathers dry and useful as long as possible, while you are on his back trying to concentrate. I think there's a bit of a pins and needles sensation you get as you connect yourselves to the scant bits of wing that you have been able to rebuild for yourself. You flick the eyes open on your wing, and they pierce through the fog. Something that you notice, you got 4 successes, so something that you notice immediately, like obviously the ocean and all the water around you all kind of has a bit of the stink of baleful intent on it. Like, everything around you feels evil. This fog is evil. The water beneath it is evil. The storm is evil. If you weren't carefully looking at things, I think you could have easily had your senses overwhelmed by the malefic intent of the water. But you've actually had a little bit of practice doing this recently. It seems like place after place that you go, you constantly have to re-engage these skills that you had left behind a long time ago. And you focus on pinpoints, and you can feel out in front of you, I want to say, about a mile or so into the water, well past the bay of Lower Nordia, you can feel some of the most hideous evil intent that you've ever felt in your life. And it has been a very long life. You feel that, but don't touch it. You know how intense it would be. Instead, you work your way mapping around it in your head. This does require you to make you and your allies draw closer to that force so you can get a really good sense of exactly what's going on out there. And slowly but surely, you pull on the threads of the universe the way a spider does, tracing through its own web for signs of victims. And tensing the strings of reality, you find out little by little information about the fleet of drowned sailors beneath you. I am gonna let you ask me three questions that you would like to know about these ships. And if you can't think of any specific questions, I'll just try and give you whatever useful information I might think would be there.
Yeah. How many?
So you feel around and establish a perimeter for yourself. This is grueling and exhausting work, especially in the storm, and especially because you feel responsible for shepherding your allies around this area. Travis is a relatively strong flyer, and John, it's a strong flyer too, in good conditions, but these are about as far from good conditions as you can get. And you naturally and easily manage to calm Metatron's nerves and guide him through this storm. And I think Flea has a little bit of his own instincts surrounding this sort of thing. So he's doing well, but Lucas needs a lot of help and gets stressed out very easily. You have to double back and check in with him. But eventually, you do manage to get a rough idea of how many ships there are, and you believe there are about five. The largest of the ships rivals the Uhuru in size. There are two ships that are about the size of Il Sangue Dio, and there is one medium-sized ship that is, you know, I want to say it's much larger than Il Sangue Dio and just a bit smaller than the Uhuru. They are all out there in the water, floating and bobbing in the heavy waves, which seem to roll around them, but not cause them any stress or damage.
They're not moving?
They're not sailing right now. They might even be anchored. Okay. But this is, of course, according to Gable's perception. But very clever, Tyler, asking a question during this so we could just get a little bit of more information out of me.
I said it, I'm like, am I cheating? I hope I'm not cheating.
It's fine.
I'm just interested in the story.
Yeah, is it cheating if you succeed and I don't figure it out until afterwards? Who can say?
Yes. Yeah.
So, next question, how many beings are on each ship?
That is going to be a heavy question that might eat up your other question. Would you be comfortable with that?
No, I would rather know which ship the Mariner is on.
You can sense there is a domineering force that sits on the largest ship. It is, you have to draw your gaze closer to these ships in order to parse out things. Like at first you start like, well, I'll just count, you know, whatever life forces or beings there on these ships. And as you slowly start pinging your perception against these drowned sailors, it is just awful to perceive them in the way Gable perceives beings. It is though all of the worst qualities in these people that are aboard these ships have been gorged and bloated, like infected lymph nodes just swelled up to absorb their entire being with this cancerous malice. And worse yet, it is all strung together and knotted within itself, leading back to this awful leeching force that is the Mariner. The construction of this creature, it's like it's almost like a jellyfish with 1,000 terrible tentacles that leak out through the water and grab onto things, slowly overwhelming their being and turning it into a part of itself. But yes, you can feel on the largest ship, there is a presence that could be nothing else than the Mariner.
Third question. Once Gable feels this jellyfish sort of connection between all of these beings in this mass, can they also tell how easily or how thin those connections are, how easily broken they are?
So the bonds between the Mariner and the people on these ships, they're incredibly strong, thick, and well established. You give a bit of a look over to Jonnet, who right now bears a Mariner's mark. The tendril that is coming from Jonnet's palm is limp and drifting lazily in the breeze, while these connections are taut like thick cables spun out of steel. It appears that not only are these beings, these drowned sailors on these ships, physically close to the Mariner, but they are deeply bound to the Mariner's will. In a way that someone like Jonnet is not.
Okay. And that's the only thing that is in this cloud, or these five ships, right?
That, yeah. You've only sensed the five ships, which, I mean, as a Corsair, you know that a raiding ship of the Uhuru size could have anywhere between 100 and 200 crew members on it. So the smaller ships like could still be carrying a staggering amount of people. The army that's amassed in these drowned sailor ships would rival Nordia. And these aren't just, you know, people who have ranges of children and elderly folk. These are all people that would be ready to fight. So you're probably considerably outnumbered, even with the presence of the Uhuru, which, you know, that is anywhere between, you know, 50 and 200,000 strong fighting people.
Who's to say? There's no way to know. I want to one more question answered, and you can let me know if I need to roll for it again. Is there any way I can tell how well armed the ships are?
Okay, you did get four successes, and that's kind of a lighter question. I think the large and medium-sized ships are gunships, which means they are designed to sport as many cannons as possible. I think the smaller ships do not have many cannons. They probably have just about, you know, six guns apiece, which might be a bigger warning sign because that probably means they're just packed to the gills with crew.
Gotcha. That is all I need to know.
Yeah. At this point, this would be where if I had drawn an unfavorable luminary, I think I would have had the Mariners have a chance to notice you. But we did draw the Changeling, which, if anything, is like the luminary that is tied to Travis most deeply. And I think also kind of offers like its own sense of concealment. So I think you've managed to like go on this little scouting mission pretty easily without events from the Mariners. However, Jonnet, you riding out over this water, I think progressively you have felt more and more stressed. Like, it is difficult to keep yourself calm. It's like your body has thrown itself into a fight or flight circumstance, and you just can't seem to snap yourself out of it. Flea is taking pains to make your journey over the waters as delicate and easy as possible. But in the middle of a storm like this, it's really difficult.
As the tension starts like building again, Jonnet is finding it harder and harder to focus on the act of like looking out for the Mariner's fleet, and more just trying to like kind of more close to himself, just like try and keep himself together. So I think he's probably trying to focus the most on just like the rhythm of Flea's flapping, which might be like how Flea is able to like sort of soothe him a little bit, because it gives him sort of a like a totem to like check in on.
Oh yeah. Like it is a storm, but albatross typically don't flap their wings that often. So maybe that is how Flea is like taking pains to help you. Mm-hmm. Flea is actually flying in a way that will allow him to flap in a rhythm.
Ugh, I like Flea. Flea's a real one. Mm. Hey, thanks, buddy.
Gable uses the lamp on the bird and covers up the light and uncovers it in a pattern that indicates that it's time to turn around and turn back.
Oh, thank you. All right, and Jonnet, go ahead and just whips the bird around.
I think Travis turns around but flies pretty high into the air. Now that he knows that kind of like the mission is over, he's going to have a little fun on the way back.
What does that entail?
Just like flying up real high, kind of diving down real fast between Jonna and Gable.
Stupid.
You know, whipping around them, being showboating a little.
Goes right.
Gable is so upset that no one said thank you places. So they're just flying straight on, real pissed off.
Yeah, Travis, I think there is just a sense of freedom and lightness that you have right now. You're flying back to port to make a very big decision, to do something that's probably life-changing. And at right now, at least from Travis's perspective, there's a pretty big chance that he will become a mortal man. So I think those feelings are kind of swirling in the background, and your showboating on Lucas is kind of keeping them at bay. And it's also, you know, Lucas was struggling a lot earlier, so this is helping Lucas out a lot too.
It's all for him.
As Travis, like, maybe cuts a little close to Jonnet, he clenches up real tight on Flea, and then she, like, yells at Travis, Hey, leave that crap in Bougenith!
Jonnet, you see out here, I'm a different bird. A man this time. I'm not a bird, which is
then
different from a bird.
I don't see how the catchphrase loses its validity if you are, in fact, not a bird at all.
Gable throws a rock at Travis.
Yeah. Travis dives off of Lucas.
Stupid.
Come on.
God.
And
why do we have birds if you want to leave the bird at any moment?
But why do we have... Why did I bring the bird?
And Lucas will catch me. Because
no,
we're buds.
He can't dive. It's a peacock.
He can dive.
No. Travis is just free falling through the air, dummy.
Yeah.
Lucas catches him and it's awesome and it rules.
I mean,
no, it doesn't.
Liz, I really wish I could overrule him right now, but we did draw the changeling. So this is happening and we have to accept it. Scotty Jacks. So we turn to the interior chamber of the captain's quarters aboard the Skyship Uhuru, where a very important holiday party planning committee is sitting around the table.
All right, the captain has given us a special dispensation to use his office, so we can plan out this upcoming religious holiday to respect all observant members of the crew. Gable, you are our liaison to the captain, so you're pretty much, you know, we're going to make requests from our perspective of things that we think we'll need to celebrate our religious holiday, and you got to approve the budget.
I cannot believe that I am here for this.
I know, it's great, it's so exciting.
We
rarely get to work together.
Yes, this is true, but I have to... I must protest that I think I'm uniquely unqualified to be part of this party planning committee.
Well,
why? Gable, you're very fun. Very fun.
Well, thank you. Spit, you just continue. I'm going to do my best and try to reserve judgment.
I feel like just by saying that, you've kind of already made your judgment known.
Yes,
there is kind of a lingering hint of judgment beneath that statement.
I'm doing my best, and my best is all I've got.
Well, I mean, this holiday only comes once a year, and there are a lot of members on the crew who are looking forward to it, so we're just trying to make it special. You know,
I will say that by saying out loud that the holiday does come once a year, you've set a dangerous precedent.
I can see my mistake now, but it's there and in the canon. So,
do I have to put the innuendos down in the notes, or can I just skip over them entirely? Because otherwise we're going to be here for a very long time.
Well, I mean, you know, you are the crew's liaison. We just need to make sure that you approve all of the budget. So
morally?
Well, first of all, there's a hint of judgment in that statement.
Just a tiny little sprinkling of judgment.
Reserving judgment.
You know, it's kind of like when someone says no comment, but you know what the comment
is. It's own comment, I understand. I'm trying to broaden my horizons. Spit, please continue. I am dying.
So, we all understand that this is kind of an office, a workplace event. So we want to kind of respect that as we talk about the budget. Obviously, I'm sure Baritone Barry, Jerk Off Jerry, I'm sure.
Yes, Jerry.
Agree to disagree on that. I think everybody came here with their own vision of what this should be. But we got to think about, you know, what's the minimum amount of this holiday? What do we actually need at the party in order for it to really be Hump Springer?
We need free reign of the ship. We need everyone off the ship unless they're going to participate.
I think that's fair.
No judgment during Hump Springer.
And both of those things are free.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And even to that point, like, I think we could save a little money by not using oil to burn candles and lamps and whatnot, so it can have good mood lighting. It's very dark and dim. Everybody can just get in the vibe and just start feeling how they feel.
Well, now I'll push back against that perhaps a little bit. I think I'll
Please
back up right
back.
Against it. What I think is
grind
there,
up all up on my idea.
Going to vomit. Going to throw up in my hands. Please.
I believe.
I'll just watch what you two've got going on.
there are certain tableaus that, you know, part of my experience of a hump springer, what I want out of a good hump springer is to be confronted by certain tableaus, to open a door and witness, just fully take in, you know, its own bit of holiday spirit.
You want a sexual Scooby-Doo. I understand.
Actually, yes, Gable. Gable touched on something very, that's amazing.
Yeah, you touched on something very sensitive, Gable. Feel free to
absolutely not
keep touching on that sort of thing.
I'm just going to go ahead and massage this idea just a little bit. All right.
Again, so, I'll just keep on watching what you all have going on.
For sure, for sure.
We have one hallway that's just full of doors. All right, and that hallway is pretty lowly lit, all right? Maybe just one at the end of the either side. And as you go into each door, some of them might be lit very well. Some might be lit not at all. But we sort of leave it up to the people that are behind the door to maybe establish the mood and feel.
Now, I like this. And again, this is doing it on the budget. This is cheap. This is easy, you know? We're staying pretty contained.
Yeah, so far we're saving money.
Can I make a suggestion? Sexy suit of armor. Maybe a suit of armor, but also there you can see it's junk. In like there's armor junk, so you can keep the junk safe, but also use it.
I'm worried that that's going to eat into the prophylactic budget, because it does sound like we would sort it into prophylactics.
Yeah, but you can just hose it out and reuse it.
That's disgusting. Mm. Absolutely not. I'm not going to buy a suit of armor, an entire suit of armor with a cod piece on it that is just going to be removed. That seems foolish and a waste of money.
Okay. I hear where you're coming from. I hear what you're saying. What if we got just the cod piece?
Sure.
I'll allow it.
Sure.
All right. Now, there are going to be some arguments over that. Sure. There's probably going to be some pushing and shoving, but that's part of the spirit of Hump Springer. So I think that's fair.
I need just to walk back a little bit. We're jumping into budget before we're talking about logistics. So you say you and the followers of this holiday need the run of the ship. How long? For what period of time? Because I'm in charge of taking the orphans on a field trip to a museum. I need to know how long I need to entertain them for.
For fuck's sake.
If it's more than 13 hours, we will all pass away. Something terrible is going to happen.
Well, I mean, a traditional hump springer, I believe, is dusk till dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Guess we can do a day trip. They're all so weak. If we go to the beach, they'll all pass out. But that's my problem. I am being judgmental. I will deal with the logistics of my end. Dusk till dawn is fair. Fine.
Oh, okay. Now Jerkoff Jerry got to make his special request of a thing that he would like to see. Baritone Barry, for you, is there anything that you feel like you need the budget to acquire to really make this hump spring special for you?
About 6 barrels of lubrication.
6 barrels is
not a lot. I know it's not a lot.
That's a tremendous.
It's on the low end. I'm trying to conserve, you know? All right.
I mean,
am I using lube wrong?
Well, I don't know. How much are you using?
I don't. That's
how many barrels do you use?
I don't use barrels.
That's fair. Yeah, you're right.
This is the thing that I think the fans would love to have established in the canon.
I've never been horny in my life, and I never will be.
You say that, but wait until you see our sexual Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
will not.
Exactly.
I'll be at the museum.
Everybody, like, this is the thing I want to emphasize. Although this is a religious holiday and it's something that we have to do because we have a quorum of people on the crew who practice this religious holiday and observe it, I do want to emphasize that everyone is welcome above an appropriate age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just thought of another thing that I would like to sort of establish. So there would be a room where you walk in and it looks like there's a penis floating in the middle of the room. Mm-hmm. And then you get closer and you're like, wait a minute, there's not a penis. It's all transparent and it looks all see-through. And then you realize that it's just a series of mirrors that make it look like the penis is floating in the middle of the room. And it's called Pecker's Ghost.
Oh, I was about to say Peeper's Ghost.
Anyway, I hope that journey was worth it for y'all.
Absolutely. Very satisfying.
Again, I hope this is tremendously satisfying. Barry has offered to perform music at this event, as it is traditional. So I would like to request some sort of amplification system, and I think this could be a general use item on the ship too. We would need to clean it thoroughly after Hump Springer, of course, but
we will throw it in the ocean. Absolutely not. Whatever you use is going right into the ocean.
You can't throw out a PA system like that.
It's
Come
going
on.
Into the ocean or a fire, whichever your preference is.
Well, I suppose that's your prerogative. If you want to ocean dispose of something instead of cleaning it, that's your prerogative. But can we get the PA system?
Yes.
Right. Because I will be the Hump Springer singer. And did you get my request for the four-part string quartet?
Oh. Yes, I did. I was a bit confused because none of them are playing string instruments that I've ever heard of.
They're just having sex.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They're bound up together in strings is the thing.
A G string quartet.
Yeah. That's
I was also thinking maybe just we have a room where people are blindfolded and we just have like a bowl of wet plums and they can stick their hands in there and we could tell them it's like mummy balls or something.
Now that's fun.
Is this supposed to be a sexy night or is this supposed to be a scary night?
It's just supposed to be a fun night.
It's a fun night.
Yeah, just a good time.
With no inhibitions. This year, we did draw a spooky theme for it. Every Hump Springer has a different theme every year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a Christmas one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, the longest line was the one to sit in Santa's lap.
Why, jerk off Jerry?
Well, because
so you
can
jerk off while you're sitting in his lap.
Okay, thank you.
And
that's what I did anyway.
Well, I just wanted to double check because we reached out to a couple people to maybe sponsor the event. Did we hear back from Hennessy? Did Hennessy get back to us?
I received a very wet box.
Yeah,
back
that sounds
from
like Hennessy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That means
they're in.
Okay. Then yes, we heard back from, it did sound like a lot of was broken inside. So we might have to contact them
again. That's part of it.
Mm-mm.
It's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Just wrap your imagination around that. That's definitely part of it.
No, no.
Well, okay. I think we've got most of it covered.
Clearly, there's a very clear plan, and just very well defined parameters for the party and for the holiday in general. That I think that people will be able to look to for years to come, annually, whatever day this may be. Every year we can sort of look towards this day.
Yeah, the last thing that I really want to sort out is the poster that we want to put up around the ship to advertise to the crew to let them know that they are welcome at our celebration, even if they haven't traditionally observed Hump Springer, that anyone can come in and get in on this Hump Springer.
Yeah, it's definitely got to be a 3D poster.
For obvious reasons. That's what I was thinking as well. You want it to be a little interactable.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or maybe it's like a magic eye. Ooh. So, you know, you stare at it long enough and then you really see what's going on.
Yeah. You stare at it long enough and it's like, oh, it's an anus.
Well, yeah. What if we sort of put those two ideas together? So, you know, you're looking at the poster. It is a 3D poster. There's some sculpture work in it that you can interact with. And then you kind of, you cross your eyes and all of a sudden it changes. You know, you see a deeper picture.
There's no way any of that is readable. 3D and Magic Eye, that's impossible. There's no way.
Do you remember when our ship used to have a taint painted on it?
I do. And I loved it. And I miss it.
We really got to get that taint.
We got to get that taint back.
We need to get the taint back.
What if we reinstate the taint? That'll be our poster.
Reinstate the taint.
We only did it twice. That's okay. Well, Gable, if you want to sign off on these 3D interactable magic eye posters to be put up around the ship and all places to let people know they're welcome to Hump Springer, I think we're ready to go.
I guess all I need is the final budget total. What's the final number?
Well, let's see. That's a cod piece being approved. We're going to have to get some
balls.
Oh, yeah. Got to skin some plums and the mirrors. That's going to set up a whole mirror room. And obviously.
About $100.
Yeah.
Yeah. All in all, pretty affordable.
Is that too much, Cable?
No, never mind. I was just trying to give you $420, but that's fine.
We were being selfish. I think we can pull it back a little bit. Let's say, mm-hmm. you know, everybody was picturing a steel cod piece. We could get a lower quality bit of metal, and I'll just do some adjustments here. And
maybe we get half as many plums, and then it's like the mummies each only have one ball.
It's coming out to 69.
Thank you. That's exactly the number that we were shooting for. All right, I will sign off on this, and on that day... If you need us, send a bird to the Museum of Science and Industry. That's where me and all of the... all of the...
What's your favorite part?
Oh, the trains.
The trains are fun. I like the coal mine.
I don't know. I've only ever...
Oh, yeah. That's a big fan of that vortex, you know?
I usually get stuck in the train.
That vortex display is really something else.
But anyway, that's where I'll be. Don't get in trouble. Don't burn the boat down. And please don't ever tell me anything about this again.
Until next year.
Okay, see you next year.
See you next year.
I will not be there. Absolutely not.
Perfect.
Have to be. It's in your contract.
Nope.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Like All My Fantasy Children. All My Fantasy Children is a character creation, world-building, and storytelling podcast powered by you. Each week, best friends Aaron Catano-Saez and Jeff Stormer take a listener-submitted prompt and, using some of their favorite tabletop RPGs, create an original fantasy character. Along the way, they populate a shared universe one story at a time. They share laughs, stories, and verbal hugs along the way. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at Liz_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who could be found on Twitter at Johnny in Briefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at ARNE P-A-R-R-O-T-T. And you can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony, spelled C-A-S-E-Y-P-O-N-E-Y, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios. The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.